It's called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. It'll be the easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me?
You really do?
Anybody on your watch?
Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet, a prophet.
Goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreamed from karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the taxi. Nah, I was legends, rest in peace, Pop's a legend, Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, now he coached him, blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them.
So, a lot has changed since the last time I spoke to y'all. It's been a little bit. Last time I spoke to y'all, the Cleveland Indians were about to take on the Chicago Cubs in the World Series. And it didn't go so well for my tribe, even though I had the Indians in 7 games. We were this close. I was this close to getting another one right. You know I'm good with the predictions, man. I was this close. But what are you going to do? And we also did not know who the next leader of the free world was going to be the last time I spoke to you guys. Turns out the game show host won the election. We have a lot to discuss, needless to say. Welcome to the preseason podcast of the year. Jay Hicks behind the mic, Hip Hop Sports Report. Got a special guest here, obviously friend of the show, friend of the HHSR family. He's a writer on the website, and he's a podcaster. He's a host of the fantastic Orange and Blueprint podcast on HHSR. He is the one and only Anthony Houston. Anthony, how you doing today?
I'm good. Good. Can't complain. I mean, I can complain, but I'm afraid that I might get a lawsuit from the president. Stuff like that. So that's my memory.
Yeah. So, yeah, Donald Trump won. Like, who had that? I don't know. I mean, I don't know too many people that had that, but he won somehow. I don't know. We could get into that quite a bit. I don't know if you have any general thoughts on him winning the election. Do you want to go get into that first?
I mean, just off top, it's a sad day for America that a guy who's completely unqualified to do the job was given a job. And you know, it's all, as Van Jones put it, a white lash to having a black president. But that's kind of just where I am off the top. And a lot of people are going to be hurt, which sucks for everybody. You know, we all lose. We all lose.
Yeah, man. My thing is, I don't really get the protests too much, I guess. Like, I'm all for protesting and voicing your opinion and stuff. And I get that there's there was an election that happened. Like, you didn't like the result. Like, your person didn't win. But, like, there were, like, protests, like, all over the country that same night or the next day. Like, I didn't really get that. Like, I didn't really get what that was supposed to accomplish. It's kind of like, I still had to get up and go to work that day. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know what these people are doing. Are they calling off work? Are they not? Are they students? Like, I didn't really get it. But my thing is, like, you know, the guy won. I'm not thrilled about it personally. But, you know, I mean, the guy has no experience in government whatsoever. Like, I'm far more qualified to apply for the job of CEO of the company that I work for, which is a Fortune 50 company. I'm far more qualified to apply for the CEO of that job than he is for president, and yet here he is. But that's, you know, neither here nor there. We're going to get into a little bit more politics, but kind of with a different angle, because, of course, you guys didn't come here to hear us, you know, be political pundits. You guys came here to listen to us pontificate on sports and hip-hop music. So we're going to talk about politics and stuff like that through that lens. But, of course, I wanted to shout out the website again, hiphopsportsreport.com. And make sure that you guys check us out on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you guys have those devices or apps, please download and subscribe there. Leave some comments. There was a iTunes. There was a comment on iTunes, actually, I want to get to, if I can pull that up. Because I remember it. I saw it, and I wanted to read it on the air. But also, again, we're on Twitter, twitter.com/HHS Report, facebook.com/HHS Report. We're also on Google Play. But let's see here. There was a comment. Well, we had a comment from the Adam Clark, of course, who said he thinks the host is sharp and his perspective is always refreshing and well-researched. Keep bringing it. Love the show. Thank you, Adam Clark, friend of the show, of course. And then we have a comment by Ish That that says the show is great. Justin always gets to the most interesting stuff going on in rap and sports. Always informative. Pretty funny sometimes, too. So that means that most of the time I'm not funny.
You gotta step your game up.
I gotta step my game up one way or another, y'all. I'm sorry. But and then let's see. Nerdy Curvy said, great podcast. I'm not a big sports fan, but the way hip hop music topics are intermixed with sports topics, I learn a little about the current events in the sports realm. Keep up the great work. Cleveland represent. So thank you. Appreciate that. And we got a few ratings on there. So go ahead and rate us on iTunes, y'all. We'll try to get to those comments and stuff like that, and check out all the work that we have on the site currently. I wrote a piece recently about the Dallas Cowboys and their quarterback situation. If we have time, we can kind of touch on that, because I think I'm dying alone on this hill right now about about Tony Romo. But yeah, let's start with, like I said, kind of talking about politics and hip hop. So did you hear Kanye West is in the news, Anthony?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Why you say unfortunately?
Well, Kanye's my guy, okay? I've been on the record before talking about how I'm a stand for Kanye, and I can't defend him, but I will continue to listen to his music, and it just kind of is what it is. He's out there, and you know what? As long as he keeps making music that I enjoy, I guess I have to, you know, look the other way a bit. You know, but that's what America does these days, so that's perfectly fine. Let him say all his ridiculous stuff, and as long as he doesn't vote, I guess we're okay. You know, if he's going to waste his vote on Donald Trump or no one,
maybe his hypothetical better vote. He's going to
hypothetical, of course. Kanye's never going to vote.
He made that much as clear. So for those of you who are unaware, Donald Trump is in the news because Donald Trump. That's it, Donald Trump. Kanye West is in the news because he was on his St. Pablo tour. Which you went to, Anthony.
Yes, sir.
So you were at this tour, rather, I don't even know what city they're in. Kanye gets on stage and basically says that I did not vote, but if I were going to vote, I would have voted for Donald Trump. And he got booed, and it did not go well for him on social media after that. People are talking about, you know, boycott his shows and all this other stuff, which I think is getting a little out of hand personally. I mean, for people to call for other people to do that, I think it's a little silly. But that's what Kanye did. That's what he does. That's who he is. And so I didn't... I mean, did you have any takeaways on Kanye doing that? I mean, like, to me, it's the standard Kanye procedure. Like, I don't even know why anybody would be that surprised that he said what he said. Because to me, like, that sounds predictable for him at this point, right?
Exactly. I mean, and the thing with Kanye is... He's a maniac. He is a person who needs to be taken with the singlest grain of salt possible, and anything he says off of a record is to be ignored, preferably by everyone at this point in time.
So, like, are you even cool with the idea that, like, you paid money? Like, okay, you know, we don't even have to speak in hypotheticals about this. You literally went to a Kanye show. I don't know how much you spent on your tickets, but, like, did you go there to hear him rant about politics and stuff like that? Like, would you even have a problem with that if he did that, if he used that platform to voice his opinion? Or would you just be like, hey, man, Jesus walks, man. Like, like, just hop to it. You know what I'm saying? Like what do you shake out on that?
Well, if it were a normal year, if this was a normal, like, you know, Democrat, Republican type election, then I would just be like, you know, okay, fine. But, you know, as a person who doesn't think humanity has a good track record of rounding people up, if you're going to vote for the guy who wants to round people up, that's against what I'm here for, so I don't want to hear that. But it's his show. I come to see him, and I know craziness is part of the package.
Yeah, that's so the Kanye package, for
if
sure.
If it happened, I would have been upset. Yeah. If it happened, I would have been upset, but at the same time, I wouldn't have been shocked by it.
Well, so I think part of me feels like Kanye just believed that he wasn't in the news cycle enough lately, so he had to make a move. Like he's, you know, I mean, like he's at his kitchen table, which is probably like on top of an aquarium or something, and he's just, Kim is sitting across from him, and she's like, I've gone through 12 hours of Facebook and Twitter tweets and stuff like that, and I don't see your name. Like, what the hell? And he's like, yes, dear. And so then he goes out to this concert and then just says, I mean, I didn't vote, but if I was going to vote, I'd have voted for Trump. And then it's like, boo, you know what I'm saying? And so I just kind of feel like maybe that was part of it. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I feel like I don't think he would. I mean, I think that there's a certain part of Donald Trump just being like an outlandish person who just says whatever he feels like saying in the moment. There's no filter.
He's a buffoon.
He's a complete buffoon. But Kanye is a buffoon, too.
Right.
And so I think that Donald Trump taps into Kanye's inner buffoon. Right. And so it's not really, it doesn't make, I mean, it makes sense that he would vote for him for that reason. Right.
Well, here's the thing. Kanye also, I feel like, is a character. Maybe I'm just hoping he's a character. I know that since Kim Kardashian was robbed or whatever, she's kind of been laying low.
Was she, though?
I mean, probably.
Was she, though?
Well, here's the thing.
Do we know that she was robbed?
She's been laying low. I read that laying low has been costing her money because her industry, her job, is to be everywhere.
To be public.
So she's not everywhere. I'm sure you're not paying her to literally do nothing. People say she does nothing now, but she's everywhere doing nothing. So being everywhere is the effort. So I'm sure that that's hurting her pockets slightly. But the thing about Kanye West is every now and again, I feel like he needs a heel turn. You know, like when The Rock joins the corporation or whatever. This is...
the corporate elbow.
The corporate elbow, exactly. The corporate elbow. You know what? Kanye West wasn't hitting the social media highlights with his $4,000 burlap sacks he'd be wearing or whatever. So now...
What are those? Can we talk about that real quick?
What are those?
What are those? Why does Kanye... Why is he considered fashion forward? Because he wears a trash bag in public with... It looks like a skirt.
Like, you know why? I have the answer.
Yes, what is the answer?
People are dumb.
Okay, well... This is a post-Trump world that we're living in, right?
Post-Trump, post-facts, post-logic.
Yeah, okay.
You don't need anything else.
That, yeah, okay. New rules.
Yeah,
right. New rules we're playing by. Yeah. I don't know, man. Do you think he's going to run in 2020?
Kanye?
Yeah.
No way.
Okay, here's my hot take. I have a sizzling hot take about Donald Trump and his presidency.
Let's hear it.
Donald Trump will not be president 4 years from now. Donald Trump will... Something will happen. I don't know what it will be. I can't say with certainty that it'll be, you know, he can get impeached. He can die in office. He can just step away because he realizes how in over his head he's in, because his head is often up his ass. So I don't know what's gonna happen. I just know that he's not gonna finish. And so, like, in, well, I guess what year would that be? So that'd be the year in January of 2021. Mm-hmm. He's not gonna be the guy standing there swearing in the next guy. So maybe that means Mike Pence is gonna be our next president. I don't know. I mean, I don't really have all those answers. I just have this belief that Donald Trump is just such an outrageous person. Like, everything about him is just over the top, that there's no way I see this running smoothly and him just coasting to his next, the next election. I just don't see it. Like, I see something interrupting it, and he's not going to be there 4 years from now.
What's the over-under? Because you're saying in 4 years, are you saying he doesn't make it two and a half years. Like, there's midterm election coming up in 2018. Does he make it past that? Because if you make it past the halfway point, you're going to go down as the biggest quitter of all time if you don't do that. You don't keep going.
It doesn't matter. Since when does all time matter to Donald Trump? Like, he doesn't care about that. You think he cares that some people are going to write some bad stuff about him? Like he's not used to bad press. That guy lives and breathes in bad press. Like, he doesn't care. So, like, if he becomes the biggest quitter of all time, he'll flip that into another reality show. It'll be called The Big Quitter or something. And then, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, he'll make it work. I don't think he's concerned about that. So, if I had to put an over-under on it, I don't know. Maybe 3 years. Maybe within 3 years something will go down. But I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be. I just don't see him finishing. I don't see this running like a normal presidency. Isn't he the oldest person ever to assume the White House?
He's up there.
That's what I heard.
He's up
like,
there for sure.
Like, that was like a low-key part of the election narrative. Was obviously, that was a thing with Bernie Sanders. Because Bernie Sanders is like 74 years old and he looks like he's like 87 years old. Mm-hmm. So that was a big thing. And then you had people talking about Hillary Clinton's health problems and stuff like that. And Hillary's like 65, 67, something like that. You only have to be 35 years old to be president. So all these old, you know, fuddy-duddies running around here trying to run my country, like, we don't need grandparents running the country. We don't, you know? I mean, not that's a problem. I'm just saying, like, it's not a requirement that you have to be that old. I think Barack was like, what, 47 when he got in office, something like that? So you can be young.
Right.
Maybe Donald Trump has health problems. Maybe somebody makes an attempt on his life and he says, you know what? I'm out. You know, and he just chunks the deuces to the entire country. Like,
shout out to Wright State alumni guy. I don't remember your name, but shout out to you for trying to think you could jump up on the stage to like accost Donald Trump. Yeah, you got out of jail. Good for you. But yeah, shout out to that guy for wasting his life. He's forever screwed.
So what happened to that guy? Did he get like arrested or did he get bum rushed by security? I'm sure
both. He promptly got his ass stomped. And, you know, that's what happens when you run up on a presidential candidate in America.
Yeah, I think that guy has it coming. Like, say what you will about Donald Trump. You can't just go running up on stage on people. That's not a good look, I don't think. I'm trying not to make sure my foot gets caught in this mic cord. Did you hear about Lil Wayne? You heard about Weezy, right?
With his 60 Minutes interview or Dateline interview?
Something like that, yeah. I think it was Dateline.
Yeah, another guy who, single grain of salt taken for this person. That should be a list. Only grains of salt for these people.
Why do we care what Lil Wayne thinks on social issues? Why does that matter? Like, this guy is drugged out of his mind 90% of his day, every day. So that he does not agree with the general consensus of Black America on Black social issues, why should we care?
He tells Black people to shut up. And that's a great way to get a lot of traction in non-Black America, is telling Black people to shut up and ignore your Blackness.
Cooning is what it's popularly known as, right?
Accurate.
So you think he's a first-class coon? First ballot coon Hall of Fame?
Maybe not first ballot. Yeah, okay. He might have to wait a couple years to get in, but okay. Yeah, he's on the list.
Okay. If you coon once, does that make you a coon? Because here's an example. So like I've observed people in the media and stuff, like, and they look like massive coons on certain issues. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I would label that person a coon, because that's a heavy label to hand somebody. So like, does one episode of coonery make you a full time coon?
I'm gonna go with a no.
Okay.
You know, if it depends on scale.
Okay, that's a fair point.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you coon it up a little bit over here, you know what, that's an embarrassing moment for you. You know, you might get, you know, some noise at like Thanksgiving, like, remember that time you said this and that? We ain't forget, nigga. So, but at the other time, it's like, you know, okay, well, you just cooned once, but it was on national TV. Don't ever come back to Thanksgiving.
Okay. Well, Lil Wayne was definitely cooning in this Dateline interview where he, if you didn't see it, he basically, they asked him about the Black Lives Matter movement. He said he does not feel connected to the Black Lives Matter movement. I don't know if he said all lives matter or not, But I think he did. He basically said that he does not feel connected to Black Lives Matter and that he only cares about his life and I think how his bitches perceive his life, to use his words. I think it was something to that effect.
Is that, I've only heard it edited. So I'm like, one of my dying wonders will be, what was that word he said? It's niggas or bitches, one of them. Either way, it completely undercuts any point he was trying to make.
I mean, yeah. Well, I don't like. See, I found it interesting that the Dateline said that they followed him around for like 2 years or something like that, which I also thought was interesting, especially considering how he's not that hot anymore. You know, so it's kind of like they were like a few years too late with this story. Like, if they wanted to follow him around between 2008 and 2010 or something like that, or you know, 2006 and 2008, then they would have been in the wheelhouse. But to follow him around now, it's like Wayne is not nearly as relevant as he was just a few years ago. So it doesn't really hit home as much when you're following around him. And then as a result, maybe you have a situation where he's pulling a Kanye, where he's like, hey, man, I haven't been in a news cycle in a little while. Maybe I'll say something crazy. Because if we've learned nothing from this election, we've learned that saying crazy stuff gets you a long way in this country. That's why I don't feel like this podcast has been as successful as it could be, because I try to breathe sense into the atmosphere, into the social media atmosphere when it comes to sports and hip-hop music. I pride myself on being intelligent, intellectual, and I try to say stuff that makes sense and that is accurate and correct. If you feel like, if you follow me on Twitter and you feel like the website tweets a lot of I told you so stuff, I'm sorry. But the reason why that's done is because we're trying to build credibility here. And I feel like between myself, Anthony, and Kenny, we say a lot of stuff that comes to fruition. And I feel like we're just trying to find a way to cut through the clutter, you know? But the clutter is saying the wildest stuff and waiting for the reaction. That's not how we do business, but it seems to be working against us because, you know, as Dave Chappelle said, we just elected an internet troll president of the United States. So to me, there's no reason to think that Lil Wayne is not just doing the same thing. Like Weezy knows that, like, can we talk about Black Twitter and just Black social media in general? Because getting Black social media up in arms is really easy to do these days. And I mean, it's eyeballs, it's attention. Like, that stuff, like, Black folks, if I had a criticism of it, it's paying attention to stuff that doesn't deserve it. You know what I mean?
Well, let me make a little, pull the curtain from behind the man a little bit here. If you look at a lot of articles where they talk about the, you know, Twitter's response to something, all the time it's like, the Black Twitter says this and that. If you look at the tweets on those things, they capture them. A lot of times there will be no retweets, no likes, or like single digits of those. So they're combing Twitter. Like, you can put in keywords in Twitter and search for something and pull out the hottest of ignorant hot takes. Now, it's someone yelling into the ether knowing that only like maybe 5 robots are going to hear them. But like Newsweek or whoever will grab that, post it on there, says Twitter is in flames because of this and that, and then have no real context for the level of discourse going on. And they also miss the jokes. Like, a lot of times, the jokes and the memes are where Black Twitter is just, like, God's gift. Like, not all of Twitter needs to be in the Smithsonian, but the Black Twitter jokes needs its own wing, because that's what I'm here for almost, like, 90% of the time.
I'm here for the jokes, too. Sometimes it can get a little frustrating, though, to be honest.
True story.
Because everybody on Twitter thinks they're a comedian. And so when I tweet something or when you tweet something and then you get a response from somebody who just thinks they're the next Eddie Murphy, you know, with a keyboard, and it's just like, nah, bro, like, that's not funny and that's not accurate. Like, they'll try to come at me sideways and then they'll drop F-bombs or whatever else. And, like, I've dealt with that on Twitter. What I've learned, though, a fun little tip for you all, what I've learned is you take the high road every single time. And nobody does this on social media. I've mastered it. I'm not going to front. I've mastered it. You take the high road every time on social media, because what happens is people will inevitably come back around more often than not. And I've turned a lot of people who have reacted to one of my tweets and said, F you, you're an idiot. And then I just engaged them politely. And by the end of the conversation, they end up following me on Twitter. That's happened several times. I've had people tell me to F off on Facebook before, on my personal Facebook page. And what followed was a conversation. You know what I mean? Rather than me taking the bait, I just responded like, why would you say that? Or don't react that way. You're smarter than that. You know what I'm saying? And when you react that way, you make them feel really small. And then it kind of puts them in check politely and nicely, and it brings them back down to earth. And then they're back on your side by the time the discussion's over. So that's what I've learned, y'all. Nobody's going to listen to me because everybody likes to argue on social media, because that's basically what social media is now. But I think you raise a great point about them only taking certain tweets and certain reactions and then trying to tell whatever story they want to tell based on that. And that kind of happened with Sage Steele too. Did you hear about the Sage Steele story?
Kind of. I just read her story a little bit about kind of, it sounded like she may have get some looks about her interracial relationship and then her own coming up or whatever. That's what I got out of it.
Okay, so I read her post. So Sage Steele is a anchor for ESPN. She's a mixed race woman. She looks black, for whatever that's worth, but she has a black father, I think, who came up in the military. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I note that she looks good, too?
She's an attractive lady. I mean, she's not my type, but she's like super duper skinny, if we're gonna
I think she's an attractive woman.
Well, no, she's an attractive woman. I mean, I'm like, okay, I'm no prize, okay? I don't want to make it sound like I don't want to go like there, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I do okay, but I'm just saying, like, if we're gonna talk attractiveness, I mean, we can do that. I mean, she's far down the list of people who I particularly find appealing on television or whatever, but she's a nice looking woman. She's just like 100 pounds,
yeah.
But anyway. So she, and she, I think she's the father of like a military guy, and I think he's black, and I think her mom is white, I think. And I believe, and then she married a white man herself. Mm-hmm. So she has children that are like 3/4 white, right? If the math is accurate. So.
Me no math good.
So I think that she's always kind of gotten some looks, and once people find out that she had a white husband, black women don't like that. Or, well, black women don't like it when a black man dates a white woman. That's what they really hate. Mm-hmm. Black people in general are not overly thrilled about marrying outside the race, and I know that's probably breaking news to some listeners, but it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. And so... she's probably gotten a side eye, like you said, multiple times, and her mentions are probably on fire a lot of times on social media for that reason. So she goes on Facebook and she gives this like impassioned plea for diversity to really be, for people who are in favor of diversity to actually be in favor of diversity 100% of the time. And so that diversity doesn't always necessarily mean white people acquiescing to black needs, but vice versa. And that black people ought to be cognizant of, black people who choose to date outside their race, or, you know, not be racist towards white people, things like that, which you can argue the merits of whether or not black people can actually be racist towards white people, because there's a growing belief that that's not a real thing, which I don't necessarily disagree with, but that's another discussion. But the point is that Sage was just saying, hey, man, if you're in favor of diversity, don't act like you're in favor of diversity and you're all about black people being respected when we get shot by the police, but then try to dog me out because I married a white guy. That doesn't equal out kind of thing. And so she got a lot of hate for that, to be honest. And I think that the main reason that she got a lot of hate for it was because her overall message was about that we should not be tearing down one another. Whereas just before that, and the timeline there is key, but just before that, she came at Mike Evans on social media, the wide receiver of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, for sitting out during the national anthem of last week's Buccaneers game. He sat out the anthem, Kaepernick style, in protest of Donald Trump winning the election.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah. So and so she did it in a not so subtle way. She like tweeted out a photo of I don't know if it was someone like a relative of hers, maybe it was, or just somebody in general, but it was like somebody like kneeling at the grave site of a fallen soldier or something. And she's like, hey, Mike Evans, next time you take a knee, think of what democracy really means, or something like that. You're making a face right now.
I'll give my response. Look, I think that her initial thing about her life and her marriage and everything, that is part of the deal. You know, that, like, I'm in one of those kind of interracial type marriages and stuff. And it's part of the deal. It's part of life. It is what it is. Growing up as a, you know, mixed race person, I've never done that. But I'm sure that that's part of your entire life. So there's probably some, like, open wounds that kind of continually open. And we mentioned this before the show started. Twitter is full of savages. So I'm sure people are in her messages, in her mentions about that all the time. So, I mean, that kind of is what it is. But to compare the want for general cultural diversity, inclusion, all that kind of stuff, to the intra-group kind of dynamics, they're not quite the same. And when you make that kind of sweeping kind of generalization is not quite the word I want, but it's going to bring out a lot of negative response when you're comparing the two. Trying to reach what really is American ideals of the melting pot or the salad or whatever it is that we're calling ourselves
mixing
now.
Bowl, I think is the
that,
phrase.
That's it, the mixing bowl. You know what? When you're trying to reach those ideals, a lot of that is like, okay, let's all be able to have a space at the table. Let's all have our voices heard. Let's all be equal, or at least as close to equal as we can make it as we strive toward that. You're comparing that goal, which is a uniquely American goal, with the idea of, hey, stop making fun of me because I am who I am. They're not quite the same, and the messages are very different. You could be like, hey, I'm black because I am part white doesn't mean I'm not getting the same level of outer level of problems, or, you know, I don't deal with racism, essentially. She deals with it, and then she's complaining because, not complaining, but she's voicing her problems intra-racially as well. And she could have just left it at that.
Well, the thing about it is that the hypocrisy of it is what really bothered a lot of people. And I think that those people that pointed that out were correct in doing so. Like, essentially, she tears down this black man, Mike Evans, for making a decision that he made. And then people called her out for it. And then she turned around and released this long-ass Facebook post saying that we shouldn't be tearing each other down. And so it's kind of like, well, you know, I think somebody said, you started it, though. like you were the one that did this first. Now, having said all that, allow me to tear down Mike Evans for a second. Because, I have no problem with Colin Kaepernick taking a knee for the cause that he took a knee for, or sitting out the anthem, because Colin Kaepernick is exercising the feeling that I have often felt about this country for a long time, and that a lot of black people have felt about this country for a long time, that we're treated as second-class citizens, and even today still, and we're tired of it, essentially. And this was his way of showing that, hey, you know, America, all the stuff that they say and sing in the song sounds good, but when you peel back the curtain, you see what America really is about, and, you know, how it was founded on and built on slavery, and that the repercussions of slavery are still felt to this day, 200 years later or 150 years later, regardless if people want to admit it or not. So I understand where Kaepernick was coming from when he did what he did, even though most of America didn't, but fine. And then it came out that Kaepernick didn't vote. And so a lot of people said, well, this guy Cap, he's an idiot. He didn't even vote in the election. How can you have a social stance like this and not even vote? Well, I'll tell you this much. I personally believe that everybody should vote, and I especially believe that all black people should vote, because people literally gave their lives to make it so that we had that right and that freedom. And so I feel like by not exercising it, you're kind of trivializing everything that they stood for that came before us. However, I understand fully where Colin Kaepernick's head is as far as his position on what America is today. And so it did not shock me when I learned that he didn't vote. And I also don't believe that this particular election was tied to, in any way, the issue of police brutality against people of color, unarmed people of color. For one, if nothing else, because it never even came up. Like, what, they mentioned it at like one debate? Like, nobody ever talked about that. Like, they don't care about black people getting shot by cops. I don't think Donald Trump cares about that. I don't think Hillary Clinton cared about it either. So to say that, you know, for him to say that I'm not voting or I didn't vote, like, to me, those two issues are not directly connected. So, I mean, you can draw a connection to them. I can draw a connection to them, sure. But I don't think that there's enough of a correlation between the election and the specific cause that Kaepernick was rallying for that it was wrong for him to not vote, if that makes sense. Now, spinning it forward to Mike Evans. Mike Evans specifically said that he was sitting out the anthem in protest of the results of the election. But then it came out on later in the week. And if this isn't true, you know, but this is just what I read. So I'm just going off what I read. There's an off chance that this isn't true. But just going off what I read, it came out later that he actually did not vote. And that because somebody had went through Instagram, he had made a comment, like, I think on Election Day, or he made an Instagram post on Election Day, and somebody asked him, did he vote? And he responded, no. And there's like a screenshot of it. So you need to sit the hell down, Mike Evans. And I don't mean anthem wise. I'm talking like you need to sit down and shut up, because what you're doing is you are casting all black people in a negative light that have an issue with the way racism is being dealt with in this country and with police brutality and all these issues that Colin Kaepernick stood for, because Colin Kaepernick is well-read and educated on his cause, you know, but you're just getting up here and just doing what the hot thing is, which is, oh, I'm going to sit out this. I'm going to go ahead and sit out this anthem too. And it's like, yeah, you can do that. But then when you don't vote, but then you're protesting the results, that's just backwards, you know? But in addition to being backwards, people are going to equate what Mike Evans is doing to what Colin Kaepernick did. They're going to say Mike Evans is a football player, Colin Kaepernick's a football player. They're both black men. They both sat out this anthem, and therefore they both hate America, or they both, you know, whatever. And by Mike Evans not voting but then protesting the results of the election, if that's true, he is casting a negative light on Colin Kaepernick, because people are going to equate him, Kaepernick, with Evans. And so anytime Kaepernick or any other black athlete wants to take a social stand, people are gonna not pay it any attention. It's like people aren't gonna take you seriously because you're crying wolf, essentially, is what I'm getting at. So that's my issue with Mike Evans. The Sage Steele thing, I mean, like I said, I think she was a little misguided with her. I don't have a problem her trashing Mike Evans, but I didn't agree with the reason why, because I don't believe that just because you sat out during the anthem automatically means you hate the troops, which is, I guess, the connection that she was trying to make. And I don't think that's accurate. And I think she's being a little hypocritical also. So we're going to get off that. That's enough politics, I think, for one podcast. But I did want to mention, y'all, that this is actually, we're approaching the 4-year anniversary, or the 3-year anniversary, excuse me, of our very first podcast. So our first podcast was recorded on November 23rd, 2013. Which is November 23rd is in, I think, 4 days, man. So we're at the 3-year mark of the podcast. How you feeling about that, Anthony?
You know what? That is a strange and scary thing. 4 years ago, Yeah, see, again, no math. But it's weird because I was not really an active participant at the site at that time, but just like a vocal supporter.
Sure.
And to just see all the, like, every now and again, I'll search for information on the site for when I'm talking about sports, whatever, I want to reference something. I'll look it up and see these dates of all of the things back, and it's just kind of crazy to see how long this has been going on, how the improvements from this. Everything, you know, it's just kind of crazy to see how far things come in what feels like not a long time, but it's been kind of a long time.
Well, I mean, it feels like a long time in the sense that a lot of work has been put in. And so I appreciate you being a supporter from the very beginning and then becoming a contributor. I appreciate that. Same with Kenneth Hicks. We have a lot of regulars on our shows and on our podcasts and on our websites. And I appreciate all those people. We have new people. Like Joe Huber was, he was on his first podcast last week, or last month, I believe. So, I mean, and there's other guests that I have in mind, guests that I've already spoken to that I know that are going to be coming, and other guests in the future. When I think back to us having Master Ace on the podcast, shout out to Master Ace. He's about to turn 50 years old at the start of December. So shout out to him. But we had Master Ace on the podcast last year. We had Drew Joyce on the podcast, LeBron James high school basketball coach. We had Roy Hall, former Indianapolis Colts receiver and Ohio State Buckeye on the podcast. And I mean, that's just to name a few of the wonderful guests that we've had on the show here, man. Like it really humbles me knowing that where we started from. And I mean, if you go back and listen to that podcast 3 years ago, I mean, the sound quality is not quite as good. I mean, things have changed a little bit. And so I'm grateful that I'm still able to do it, and I'm still able to hopefully bring a halfway decent podcast to you all, because that's why we call it the preseason podcast of the year. We're not quite podcast of the year material. We're still a work in progress. You know, we're just a little bit of self deprecation there. But yeah, man, I just thought I'd point that out, that we're approaching the 3 year anniversary of the podcast. So it's kind of crazy how time flies. But I want to talk a little bit more about hip hop, man. So what do you think is the hottest song in the country right now?
Hottest one is going to be tough. It's probably something Drake related. That's how it has been for a while. Personally, as far as like really big mainstream hip hop, you know, Black Beatles is probably one of my favorites.
Boom, there it is. Black Beatles. I never thought I'd like these little dudes as much as I do. Ray Schremer, these dudes, they keep coming with the hits, man. I'm just like, I'm a little surprised that I like that song as much as I do. But I like it. I don't know what else to say, man. Like, because the thing about it is that like I feel like I'm a little too old for their music. Here's the funny thing about Ray Schremer is that they're on, I think, their second album, like Shrem Life 2, yeah. I think. So like they got compared to Criss Cross when they came out. The problem with that is Criss Cross were 12 and 13 years old, or 11 and 12 years old when they were out, like when they were hot, and these dudes were like 23.
Like if you're, they were that old, they might be 23 now.
You have a phone in your lap. Pull it up right now on the podcast and look up how old those two dudes are. They're probably like 24 and 25 right now, or 23 and 24, something like that. And the thing, and which means that when they came out 2 or 3 years ago, they were like 21 and 23 or something. My point is just that if you're in your early 20s, I don't know that it's a good thing that you're getting compared to 12-year-olds. But they've made it work. How old are they?
The brothers, they were born in 93 and 95.
That makes them 21 and 23 years old now.
Yeah. Okay, so 16, 17.
They have not been out for 7 years. No, they've been out for like 3 years at best.
Okay.
At best. I mean, I think they've been out for probably less than that, but maybe like 2014 is when they first hit the scene. They were adults, is my point. They were by the law.
Yeah, if we're going by the law, yeah, I mean,
they were full blown adults when they hit the scene. What was the first record that they did that Nicki Minaj did a remix for? What was that record?
The first thing they know that I know they did was No Flex Zone.
That's the one.
Okay.
Yeah. No Flex Zone. So when that came out, they sounded like kids on the record. So I thought they were kids, but they were adults then. Mm-hmm. And they're getting compared to 12-year-olds. You know what I'm saying? So it was always kind of like a weird position to be in, like if you're a Ray Schremer fan. But you know, they came out with that, and then they had the other big hit, the I Ain't Got No Type, and they had a couple other songs here or there, and now they've come back with Black Beatles, and I think Black Beatles is like number one on the Billboard charts. And yeah, I got
Beatles is their official first number one hit.
I just gotta take my hat off to those dudes, man. And I gotta take my hat off to Mike Will, because I thought Mike Will was kinda not past his prime, but well yeah, maybe past his prime. Maybe that's the right word to take, because the thing with producers is they have a short shelf life, most of them do, as far as like when they're on top. So like if you're like Timbaland's been arguably the greatest rap producer of all time, over the course of like spanning 15, 20 years. But like there was a moment in time between like 1996 and 1999 or something like that where he owned the sound of hip hop music. It was one of those things where you kind of had to go through Timbaland if you wanted to get the hottest record. If you were in the club and you wanted to rock out to some, it had to be a Timbaland record, whatever. And then with artists that don't have the longevity that he has, or excuse me, with producers that don't have that kind of longevity, you have guys like Mike Will come along and they just own a summer. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, but that producer owns this summer, and their sound is dominant right now. But it doesn't necessarily extend much beyond that. I remember Luger had a period like that. Lex Luger, but he just owned like the summer of 2010, 2011. He was working with like Wiz Khalifa and Rick Ross and all these dudes. And like that was just his time. And then it kind of came and went, you know? So then Mike Will comes along a few years ago and it's like, okay, he's the next hot one, but it's not going to last. At least that's what you think. And these are his artists too, Ray Shrimmer. So, I mean, I got to give nothing but props to Mike Will and Ray Shrimmer for doing what they do. They're the Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott of hip hop.
Well, here's one thing about them. Like, I listened to, Shrimp Life 2 when it came out, and it dropped, and they had three or four other singles on there. There's a song, Lil Jon, that came out, didn't get any traction. There was another song, Look Alive, that I like. That may be getting a little slow burn now, but Black Beatles came out and it like kind of sort of saved the album, saved the sales anyway, or sales, I guess. But like the thing about it is Black Beatles came out and I didn't quite start hearing it until I started seeing people doing it in the Mannequin Challenge.
Oh, which brings me to my next point.
Thank you.
So transitioning, I was not aware that the Mannequin Challenge was related to that song until way after the fact. Like, I did not know that those two things were tied together. Like, I guess because maybe like the volume of my phone was down or my computer was down when I kept seeing the Mannequin Challenge pop up everywhere. So I didn't realize that they were doing it to that song. And like, it's not like they do the Mannequin Challenge in the video.
Nope.
And so like, I didn't really get it. And then I saw they did the Mannequin Challenge on like the late night edition of SportsCenter, like this past week. And Ray Shrimmer was in the Mannequin Challenge at the end. They were like the last two dudes, and I didn't even recognize them at first. I'm like, wait a minute, they don't work on a set of SportsCenter. They look like one of these things is not like the other. Like they don't look like the rest of the cast. And I was like, wait a minute. I know those guys. That's Ray Shrimmer. Like, what are they doing there? And then they mentioned it on the lead in the SportsCenter. And then that was my first introduction to that being related to the Mannequin Challenge. So remember when Soulja Boy came out in 07 and he came out with the Superman dance or whatever, the Soulja Boy, the Crank That dance, Soulja Boy, whatever the name of the dance was.
Yeah.
And the dance was stupid as hell and it didn't make any sense, but damn it if it didn't catch on.
Like wildfire.
Like wildfire, right? So maybe this is just a new thing. Like I know that there's been other like challenges. What was that one song? The Hit the Quan challenge. There was a Hit the Quan challenge.
Yeah.
I kind of like that one. But like, there's all these like challenges that hit Instagram and hit Twitter and Facebook and stuff. And I mean, some of them are directly related to rap songs specifically. Some of them aren't, I don't think. But here we are now where this particular song and this particular challenge have taken off. You know, at the same time, and both of them have, it's been a mutually beneficial marriage. I feel like the song and the social media phenomenon have both benefited from one another.
I tell you what, if I see a Mannequin Challenge and it does not have Black Beatles on it, I'm cutting it off.
Really? Well, I mean,
it's less satisfying, completely. It's discount Mannequin Challenge.
But the song has nothing to do with mannequins, though. Like, that's the part that I don't really get. Like, they don't have anything to do with one another. But they just do, though. You know what I'm saying? The song has nothing to do with mannequins. Mannequins have nothing to do with the songs. The Beatles never were mannequins in the 60s. And, you know, Did you see Paul McCartney did the mannequin challenge? Oh, and he did. And he co-signed it. He's like, I'm down with this, but I love these Black Beatles or whatever.
Yes.
And then and they show him, he's like, yeah, one hand on the piano, and he's like looking up into the air, frozen. That was his mannequin stance. And yeah, man, he co-signed it. So I don't know, man. Like I guess more power to him for being in a position of the rain. I guess that to spin it forward, I guess the new thing is just going to be you got to have some kind of hashtag challenge to go along with your record, right? Like that's when is that going to be part of the marketing plan for a new artist coming out with a new record?
I'm sure it's already there now.
It's got to be, right?
It's got to be.
Like, you got to be. It's got to be built in. Like you got to come up. Like you pitch your artist to a label, and if I'm the label executive or the A&R or whatever, I'm sitting there like watching I'm like listening. Like back in the day, it was like you bring a cassette tape, you pop the cassette tape in, you listen to it. Maybe you bring them in live for a show, like not a show, but you know, they'd perform a song live in front of you. Now it's like, okay, what's your dance? You got to have a dance to go with it. Okay, what's your angle? Okay, what's your hashtag challenge? Yeah, right?
You got to have that. You got to have the emoji. You got to have everything. Yeah. All of it.
Right. The emojis are a big deal too, right? Yeah. So, I mean, we saw Beyonce with Lemonade. She had the bees and the lemons, and that just went nuts. We saw with Drake and Future when they had the diamond thing. The diamond was a part of their presentation when they made their record together last September. And everybody started flooding people's social media, specifically Meek Mill, flooding their social media with diamonds, right? Because that was their thing. Like, if you don't have an emoji picked out, and you don't have a challenge of some kind or a dance or something, like, lots of luck, man. Like, I guess that's just the way of the world now. Anything else catching your ear lately? I know there's been a ton of good music out, man. Tribe got a new one out. Jeezy's got a new one out. Anthony wrote a fantastic piece out on the website where he talks about Run the Jewels and the new Drake records and stuff. What else is in your headphones right now?
Well, you know what? I just, I've been trying to listen to that Childish Gambino that came out.
The album didn't come out yet, did it? Just the one record, right?
Just the record. I think maybe some more came out. I don't really know for sure. I haven't had a chance to look at anything else. But I know I listened to that one record. It's nice. Got a nice little vibe to it. It's not quite as much as him rapping as I'd like. But it's still, you know, it's Childish Gambino. So it's under the hip-hop umbrella. So I'll bring that up.
Can I pause you right there real quick? Because So you mentioned something about Gambino not really rapping, and I have this kind of this ongoing thing. If you follow me on Twitter or follow us on Twitter at HHS Report, you've seen tweets, chances are, about Chance the Rapper not rapping. Like, so am I alone on this island that, like, of people that have not fully bought into the Chance the Rapper experience? I'm not saying I dislike him. I'm not saying that. I can't fully get on board with him. He seems like a fantastic artist. He seems like a better artist than rapper. That doesn't mean he can't rap, but most of the time when I see him performing, he's not rapping. And the fact that his name is Chance the Rapper really bothers me. It just does. I'm sorry. Like, I saw him on, I was actually, fell into, you ever like just start watching like freestyles on YouTube and then you just watch like 6 of them in a row or 10 of them in a row? I was doing that yesterday. Like, I just fell into this. I watched this Little Dicky freestyle on Sway in the Morning. And then I watched a Chance the Rapper freestyle from like 3 years ago on Sway in the Morning. And it was not good. And he was coming off the dome, which, you know, whatever. Like, you can kind of, you give a certain grace with people that are freestyling off the dome, right? But, like, he was coming off the top, and it was not impressive at all. Now, granted, it was 3 years ago, so maybe he's better now at that, but I read the comments, and the comment section was like, this is the greatest Chance freestyle I've ever seen. And I'm just like, what? Like, no, man. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm alone on the Chance thing. And I don't know. I think that it's a fine line with these rappers. Like, a lot of these rappers, a lot of these newer rappers, a lot of the nerd rappers, the Cuddies, the Gambinos, you know, you have J. Cole, Drake. These guys like to sing on their stuff. And Chance the Rapper is probably the king. He's trying to wrestle Drake for the crown as we speak. So I don't know. It just kind of bothers me. Also, I wanted to point out that Childish Gambino, a.k.a. Donald Glover's show, Atlanta, fantastic.
So it's so good. If you're not watching it, do yourself a favor. Go back and watch it. First season's done. You can binge it. I mean, it's something, like, I don't like to go back and watch shows.
I do.
Well, other than The Simpsons, stuff like that. But, like, I might go back and watch the whole episode, the whole season one, just because it's so, so good.
I might do that also. Like, I tried to get the wife into it. Her response was, that show's weird. Which, that's kind of the point. Like, it's supposed to be a little weird, but, like, not. But it tackles a lot of issues, though, and in an interesting way. I love Paperboy. He's my favorite character. Yeah. Paperboy and Van are, like, my favorite characters on the show, actually. But I think Van is better looking than Sage Steele, for the record.
She is.
I mean, Van is not ugly.
No, not at all.
But yeah, Van, and I think she's a great character. I think Paperboy is hilarious to me. I love how Paperboy is almost famous. He's Atlanta famous. Right. He's not famous.
He's hood rich.
He's hood rich. He's hood famous. And it's like the way that they articulate his hood fame on the show is just brilliant. Like, mm-hmm. Like I just love how he's in the club on that one episode and that guy just walks up to him and just starts rapping his entire song to him.
Yeah, right.
Because I've often thought about, as a fan, like, if I were to meet Jay-Z, what would I say to Jay-Z? And I've always thought to myself, I would want to convey to him how much of a fan I have been for so long. So I would have to start rapping, like, the most obscure Jay-Z lyrics I could think of. Hmm. Like, live from the 718, either respect the flow or learn your lessons from the wake. I'm wishing arthritis to all writers who knock my hustle, whatever he says, something like that. That's the I'm with the game made me, not with the something made me. I'm struggling.
I'm glad you didn't do this in front of him.
Yeah, I got to practice more.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is that I used to know way more rap lyrics than I used to. Than you know what I'm saying. Now my memory bank is being taken up by baby stuff and owning a house and being an adult. Adulting will zap your memory.
Adulting is the worst thing to ever happen to kids. Life and childhood ever. Right.
Anyways, so yeah, man. Was there anything else that you wanted to touch on, though, as far as what you're listening to?
I mean, it's off subject, but that Bruno Mars kind of short album that came out, if you like 90s style hip-hop, like, that is not hip-hop, hip-hop R&B, it's right in that wheelhouse. It is great. It's only eight, nine tracks. But I love that. But
I've heard that that's great.
It is.
I've heard that the new Tribe is great.
Yeah. You know what's good? A lot of we kind of laughed at Meek Mill earlier. A lot of DC4 is good.
I've heard a few songs off DC4. The Litty song, I like that song a lot. I actually like Tory Lanez a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I think that dude has a bright future.
Yeah, he.
I don't know if I could do a full album of him though. That's the only thing. You know, he's kind of like. He's great on hooks.
Yep.
He's great on an individual song. I don't know if I could do 12 songs of him in that tone.
Let me get another over. Over under six Tory Lanez songs that you could listen to before I turn it off. No skits, all songs.
I'll say over right now, but not by a lot.
Okay.
One thing I also wanted to listen to was Nipsey Hussle. I think Nipsey Hussle has a new project coming, or he just released one. I'm not sure.
News to me.
Okay, well, I'm a big Nip fan, so I'm going to have to check that out.
I like Nip too.
Yeah. Don't we all, right? We got about 10 minutes left, man. Want to talk some football or something?
Let's do it.
Okay. Or do you want to talk first start of the basketball season?
Well,
let me just, okay. How about I do this? Sorry. Let me just do my spiel on the Dallas Cowboys.
Okay.
And then we can jump into the NBA with whatever time we have left.
Okay.
Okay, so real quick, y'all. There's an article out on the site about the Dallas Cowboys that I wrote about 2 weeks ago where I said that Tony Romo should still be the starter of the team. And as I told Anthony prior to the podcast, I think I'm dying alone on this hill. Because everybody's behind Dak. First, it seemed like it was just black folks because black folks love to support other black folks. So I was like, oh, yeah, Dak's got to be the starter. And it's like, well, okay, put the fist down, Anthony. I'm just saying. It's like, okay, yeah, Dak is doing very well. But what people don't seem to realize is how good Tony Romo was. The last time that he was under center for an extended period of time with an elite running back, and that was less than 2 years ago. Less than 2 years ago. His passing numbers were unbelievable. I think he had like 34 touchdowns and 9 interceptions on the season, something like that. I think he like led the league in passer rating and QBR and completion percentage and all these other crazy statistics. I thought he should have been behind DeMarco Murray in MVP voting that year, but he actually tied with DeMarco Murray for third place in MVP voting. Same as this year, people are giving Dak Prescott MVP consideration, which I'm fine with him getting consideration. I just don't think he deserves it more than Ezekiel Elliott. Really, the offensive line is the real reason why Dallas is winning, but like, they're doing it because they're a run-first team, and that's what they did. All these years that the Cowboys were not winning, it's because they were a pass-first team. Even though Roman was very good, he wasn't good enough to get them over the hump, and the defense wasn't great either. Well, what they did was they scaled it back, and they said, okay, we're going to rely on this great offensive line and DeMarco Murray. And Romo, as a starter, I think he went 12-3. He was third in the league in MVP voting. He led the league in a whole bunch of passing statistics, and the Cowboys nearly went to the NFC Championship game. And so I don't see what, as great as Dak Prescott has been, I've yet to see what he's doing now that is unlike what Tony Romo did 2 years ago under the same offense with the same system. Do you have any thoughts on that real quick? Like, why am I tripping because I'm defending Tony Romo? I'm the last guy left.
Well, the thing is, you can't mess with a winning mixture.
Wasn't it a winning mixture before?
Yeah, but you always had the fear of Tony Romo getting hurt.
Sure.
Everyone's fears came to life.
Sure.
You found this young, dynamic player who's probably not going to get injured. And then you also have Ezekiel Elliott, who is the MVP in my vote, if I had one. And I think they're winning. They're winning the way they want to. Everyone's on board. All the arrows are going in the same direction from the Dallas Cowboys. And if you put Tony Romo in there, it's impossible to know that that's going to keep happening.
Okay. My only counter to that is I think the team and the locker room, I think, would probably be more okay with it than most of us outsiders think. Tony Romo has never had a problem with the Dallas Cowboys locker room. He's always been in everyone's good graces, including Dez Bryant, and that's hard to do. Stay in his good graces, right? And I think that's the one ingredient that people aren't really giving enough credit to or credence to, is that Dez doesn't get the ball a lot in this offense with Dak. At least when Romo was dropping back, Dez knew he was going to get some looks. Dez has had like maybe two good games all year, you know, statistically, and he doesn't know that Dak is going to look his way. Dak would rather look to Jason Witten and Cole Beasley than Dez Bryant. And so at any moment, Dez, like, it only takes one game where the Cowboys don't throw the ball to Dez and they don't win the game that Dez loses his mind. And so when that happens, then think of the distraction that you're going to have on your hands. But I just feel like Romo has been, he's had the support of the entire franchise for 10 years. So if he were to come back in, internally, I don't think it would be a big deal. But externally, oh, everybody would lose their mind, right? Because everybody's favorite son, Dak Prescott's not starting anymore. So I think that's where the real issue would be Dallas trying to juggle or how they would handle or navigate the off-the-field criticism from that move. And so I can understand why they would not make that move for that reason, but I don't think that internally it would be that big of a deal. I mean, can we agree that Tony Romo is a better passer than Dak Prescott? I don't feel like enough people are saying that out loud.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a big leap to make.
No, not at all.
You're making a big gamble with the entire team. Like, what if he comes in and he has a game off? That's a game you could have won.
I don't think he's going to – I would not be as concerned of him having an off game when he comes in, because he's going to be turning the ball and handing the ball to Zeke 30 times. That's the offense. So Tony Romo comes in, he hands the ball to Zeke 30 times, he gives it to Alfred Morris another 6 or 7 times, and he throws 20 passes. Like, that's what they did 2 years ago, and they almost were in the NFC Championship game. That's what they're doing this year with Dak Prescott. Nothing's changed. Like, I'm not asking Romo to come back in and chuck the Cowboys to a Super Bowl. I'm asking him to come in and hand off. But when somebody finally stops the run or puts 10 in the box to stop Ezekiel Elliott, right, that – at a certain point, Dak is going to be called on to make throws that maybe he hasn't had to make so far this year. And to his credit, he's made some throws against some teams. You know, he made some good throws against Pittsburgh last week. Pittsburgh's defense is terrible. I don't give him a ton of credit for that. He did good, but it's Pittsburgh. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. I'm confident that Tony Romo could go up against a good defense and throw the Cowboys to a victory in a playoff game if need be. Even though Romo hasn't had a ton of success in the playoffs, I stand by that statement. So, anyways, let's jump into the NBA with our remaining time. We're about, I don't know, 20% through the season so far, something like that. right? What say you? What takeaways do you have on anything besides the Knicks? Or you can talk about the Knicks. I don't care.
You know what? I'm having a good time. I'll leave that alone for now. Well, first off, you know, I'm a little impressed with your Clippers. You know,
my Clippers. I've never heard that before.
You're hearing it now.
Well, in full disclosure, I had the Clippers coming out the West, so I feel pretty good about that prediction right now. Yeah. On November 19th,
the Clippers are looking good. The Clippers are good, but I still can't get past the I've earned a feeling of wait and see with the Clippers.
Sure.
And so I'm that's where I'm at with the Clippers.
You have to wait till the playoffs and see with the Clippers.
Exactly. You have to wait till the playoffs and see. Like, so much of everything is wait till the playoffs and see. Like, I'm there with Golden State. Like, Golden State, they don't play as great defense as they did last year, and that's to be expected. They, you know, shipped out some of their defenders for Kevin Durant. I'm not sure that they're still not my favorite to win because I just don't see it. But it's 20% of the season in, and it's I'm intrigued by them. I'm intrigued by, you know, what's going on with the glut of the East. You know, that all the teams are
interested. Dude, I had the Pacers being the top challenger to the Cavs. They're not looking good right now. Now, granted, it's early, and they brought in a lot of new pieces, too. So we got to give them the same time that people want to give other teams that bring in a lot of new parts. But they haven't looked good so far this year. Charlotte's looked really good. Atlanta's looked really good.
Here's the thing.
Boston has not looked good.
And that's what they deserve. Here's the thing about the NBA. The teams that are doing good are the teams that look almost exactly the same as they did last year.
That's a fascinating point. And, yeah, you're right about that. So that's your Spurs. That's your, the Warriors are doing well. But the Raptors are doing pretty well. DeMar DeRozan's averaging like 35 a game somehow. Obviously, the Cavs are doing great. The Clippers are doing great. So that makes sense. I guess, like I said, and like you said, Charlotte is looking good. Atlanta basically traded Al Horford for Dwight Howard.
Right.
And they got rid of Jeff Teague. And those are the only significant moves that they made. And it's working.
Yeah.
None of those teams have made coaching changes. So they're all in good shape there.
Yep.
So I think there's something to that with the early part of the season. And I think as the year unfolds, you're going to see some of those teams maybe rise up or fall off depending on how they perform. But I think that like the continuity is going to get better, and that will help most of these teams out. Yep. You look at Oklahoma City, they're struggling. They're not terrible, but they're not nearly as good. I mean, people put them in the Western Conference Finals. I never saw that for this team. Mm-mm. And I don't think it's good. And this is something that Robert Westbrook I've been meaning to say, is that I don't think it's good that everybody's all in on these 30-point triple-doubles. Like, oh, man, Westbrook's numbers are amazing. Like, 35, 13, and 12. Like, he's, like, okay, that's great. And I've been a Westbrook supporter for some time. You know that, right? That's not good for them. And beyond just the shot attempts, Westbrook had, like, a 45-shot game this year somehow, like, or 40-something shot game. Beyond just that, the idea that Russell Westbrook is going to be responsible for that much of the load in Oklahoma City and people are just okay with it. This is his time. Like, he's been waiting on this. I don't buy that, because all that's going to happen is he's going to get hurt. They're just going to ride this thing till the wheels fall off, and they will fall off. And when Russell Westbrook gets hurt and has to miss 6 weeks or whatever because of a stress fracture in his foot or whatever, Oklahoma City's really going to crash and burn. But they're allowing Russell Westbrook to carry 100% of the burden of the entire team when supposedly this is supposed to be a pretty good team around him. So I think that's a problem for them. I'm happy with what the Clippers are doing. I think they're really good. I think they're still underrated. And I think Chris Paul in the playoffs is underrated, although I'm afraid of what Blake Griffin's going to do in crunch time every single night. He's just not a good crunch time player, so that concerns me. The Cavaliers are looking fantastic, obviously. Kevin Love is having a rebirth, which I'm just giddy over as a Cavs fan, because he got such a raw deal the last several years where people talking about they just didn't believe that Kevin Love was a good number three guy, that the Cavs needed to trade him or whatever reason. I never believed that for a second, because as a third option, his statistics were on par with other third options on championship teams. And so people were kind of missing the boat on Kevin Love. So he's been great. Kyrie's been great. That's all well and good, man. I'm not surprised Golden State's doing well, but they're not like they have their blowout wins, which was to be expected, and then they have these other games that they've won, but they did not look good in.
Yeah,
like they played a lot of games where their talent just carries into a win. But it's like if they were playing that same quality of ball against a good team, they would have gotten their ass kicked. That's happened a few times this year already. So we'll see how it all unfolds, man. We're about out of time, though. Thank y'all for listening to Anthony and I run our yaps for the last hour and 10 minutes. This is the first of many podcasts we're going to do together because we're in the same vicinity now. So, Anthony, appreciate having you, man. Salute indeed. Check out the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. We're out of here. Peace.